Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
What's happening, guys? Happy Friday, and thank you for joining another special episode of Your Welcome. Boy, I gotta tell you, I feel like we got a lot of news that has come out just in the last few days. Look, coming up on today's program, I'm gonna get into all the top stories, including the online feud that's going on between Jon Jones and Tom Aspinall. Some whispers around the boxing world say there's a fight brewing between Nate Diaz and Jorge Masvidal, and I really want to know whether you guys care. I also want to let you know if I care. I'm wondering if Dustin Poirier has made a mistake. He's putting a big risk up, but that is why they call him the Diamond. Guys, all that and more is coming up on today's show. Let's start here. UFC 300. Hard to let it go. I mean, I must tell you, I don't know how much I care about cards. I know the importance of cards. I'm sharing me. I'm a fan. There is not a weekend where I'm not watching cage fights. There's not a weekday where I'm not speaking to you guys about cage fights. And that doesn't matter if you got pay-per-views. That doesn't matter if you got UFCs, ONE Championships, Bellator, Strikeforce, WEC. It's some old tape they're putting on out there in Hawaii. Super Brawl, that was called. Now, I'm just sharing with you, I'm a fight fan, and the brand alone will bring me in, and I have a trust for the brand that they will deliver something. Now, that does not represent the market. You cannot make a business on a guy with that kind of a mindset. I understand that. I'm just sharing because I'm surprised at myself how pins and needles, if you will, I have been towards UFC 300. Who is it going to be? The speculation. Not to mention the hater side, where you're not going to be able to get this fight. Oh, you can't do that fight. Aspinall versus Pereira. Gaethje versus Holloway. You know, I mean, I'll just share with you that it has been interesting because Dana White never bluffs, does he? You couldn't tell me a time. You could tell me times you thought he was bluffing. Could tell me times that he told you this sport has just started. He could tell me times that he said we're going to do 40 plus shows a year. You could tell me times he said we're going to build our own complex. You could tell me times that he said we're going to go international. But you can't tell me a time that he was bluffing. You could tell me a time that he said we're going to go mainstream. And everybody said, no, you're not. No, you're not. You're, no, you're not. You could tell me a time that he said we're going to get an island. You tell me a time he said we're going to be the only sport in the world that comes back and we're going to do it first. We're going to make it safe, but you can't tell me a time that he was bluffing. And he says he's got a super fight that fell in his lap. Wow. Now, we don't know what in the hell super fight means, do we, guys? Super fight used to come with a belt. It used to be a title. And I loved it. It's the most beautiful belt, by the way, but it was the great fight. The super fight was so fun. I mean, this is way back in 93, 94, 95, you're right, these times where you bring two guys in that were stars, two guys that knew each other. The whole sport up until that point was just two guys. He was representing this discipline and he's representing this discipline. When you did super fights, you had two guys that had already been there that we'd already seen before. It was so fun. Do you guys remember Saturday night's main event? Are you old enough to remember that? Vince McMahon, back when it was great, when it was WWF, like it still should be, he would have Saturday morning wrestling, and it would be complete squash matches. There would be a guy and tell a story, and he would just come out against a jobber, and he would just squash him. And that's all it was, and it did great. People loved to see that. But Saturday night's main event is where he would take those guys that are doing the squashing and put them against each other. Every Saturday morning, you'd see one guy you know versus a guy you don't know. And Saturday night's main event was two guys that you knew. That might sound small. That might sound obvious to you. But at the time when that first was being done, it was such a treat. And Saturday night's main event has gone away because there's just no way to do it. Now that's called Raw. If you're coming out of the tunnel on Raw, on TV, people know who you are, both sides of it. So that's what Superfight used to represent, but there's no actual rules with it. You don't have to have a belt with it. Over time, we have started to reserve the term Superfight for champion versus champion. Where to be a Superfight, you would need a parody that you could not get on any other night. Tonight you can have it. It's a super fight. Adesanya versus Blachowicz. Great example. Two different weight classes. My point to you, we got a guy who never bluffs saying he's got a super fight. But before you hold him to anything or box him in and say, well, then you must produce such and such. No, not really. Super fight doesn't come with a definition. We do know, right, that's the big one. When you say super fight, you are superseding in terms of wow factor title fight. And you're superseding main event. Okay, super fight does not open the card. Super fight is not third down. Super fight. Wow. What do you got there? And that would be speculation at best. Right? I mean, I'm the first to have told you the rush to get Strickland versus Duplessis to the market has to do with 300, and it has to do with the return of Izzy. But at the same time that I told you that, I made it clear to you that's not done. That's not even agreed upon. Strickland, Duplessis have not even been notified of this. It's just a working idea. And Izzy got his court case cleared up so that he may enter Canada, so that he may be there to greet the winner. Now, where that goes, right? I mean, that's tomorrow's problem. Got a lot of pieces here. Izzy came out and said, I'm on track. I'll be back. And I project the way that I heal, I project that I'll be back at the end of next month. If that is accurate information, then Izzy will not be fighting at UFC 300, not three rounds or five rounds. If his return to practice is on March 1st, he will not be fighting in April, but that doesn't mean that is accurate information, right? This is from the same guy that said my next fight will be in 2027. So, got a little bit of wiggle room. What's he getting on a plane and flying out to Canada for to greet the winner of that fight if he's not in a position to take the fight? I'm just suggesting for you, right? But let's say that that information's true and that removes a possibility of Izzy, because there's another rumor out there that we need to end. We don't want Piera versus Izzy is a very bad idea. Don't do that. But that rumor still exists. So we can chalk that off the board if he doesn't show up. That takes you from two different rumors. And you're still left with Superfight. And what does that mean? So, Javier Mendez, coach Javier Mendez, owner and leader of the American Kickboxing Academy, came out in an interview and said that Khabib is back training with me. Now, Khabib is known to go to practice every single day. He is known to be there with the team. And, I mean, I got to tell you, on Khabib, I saw this firsthand. Eagle FC, when Khabib was putting those in, he'd take red eyes. He'd fly in at 1 and 2 in the morning. I would always take a red eye. We'd be checking into the hotel at the same time. And I'm an early riser. I'd be coming down to get some coffee, 5:30. He was down there covered in sweat because he was doing a sauna workout with a guy on the car that was his teammate who's got to weigh in between 9 and 11. Oh, man, when does this guy sleep? Then he would be at all of the meetings, the production meetings. He'd be over, right? And then he's running workouts that night. And then he's got a dinner where the executives come in, do a quick business dinner. I mean, it was one of these things where he was full-time and he was hustling. So I understand that you understand, if you've heard stories like this, that Khabib's going to be in the practice room. Training as opposed to being a practice are different. And Javier talked about that. Coach Mendez spoke about that. He said, Khabib always goes to practice, but he only trains with me when he's getting ready for a fight. And that is all I know. And that's a massive statement. That is a really massive statement. There's a difference when Coach Mendez speaks of Khabib and I are preparing Islam. Khabib and I are preparing the team. It's very different. To Khabib, packed up, left the family, came to San Jose, and is doing his own training with me. And, I mean, that would be a cat to let out of the bag to the highest of levels. But then again, Coach Mendez did not guarantee anything. And it's just one of those spots, right? It's one of those very interesting positions. Are we to speculate along those lines? There is some reason that Leon versus Blahal did not get made. It was expected and it was planned. Leon was in attendance. I apologize. Blahal was in attendance. It was expected. It was planned. Blahal's schedule led to a media tour post-fight. That's where he goes into the back. They got different cameras with step and repeat set up. And he goes over here and he speaks with Megan. And he comes over here and he speaks with Brett. And he comes over here. Sees if old Chael's got time for him. I mean, that's the way it goes. He was scheduled and he did that tour, which is not done for any athlete other than one that has something to announce. But he didn't. He didn't. Something had happened. Some kind of news came in. Some kind of word came in. Something became available. And as soon as you had an association of Khabib, and guys, this is nothing more than a rumor, but it's a rumor that came from Coach Mendez, who's training him, who says, I don't train him unless it's for a fight. It's fascinating. You know he's not going to come back at 55. And the very first association went, of course, to Canada. Of course, it went to George St. Pierre. And that sure would be a super fight. But how do you put on top of the bill a non-title when it's your biggest bill that you've ever booked? It's an interesting situation. There is a reason Blahal and Leon isn't booked, and that might come around. But if that comes around, that's because the reason I speak of fell out. But there is a reason. Khabib is training for a reason. Khabib is not fighting at 155 pounds ever again. And Dana's not putting on UFC 300 without a title on top of the bill. Your Honor. Your witness. Poirier versus Denise. Did Poirier make a mistake? That seems to be a big narrative that's out there. And a lot of the people making the statement are quoting me. They're saying, hey, Uncle Chael always talks about it's the card placement. Just for example, talks about that fall, talks about, hey, your job, get the biggest check with the easiest opponent. Is that what Dustin's done here? I understand all those concepts. I appreciate that. I think that's what you should be talking about. But when you get done talking about it, when that is concluded, make sure you view it from the other side. Because the narrative of did Poirier make the right move talks about the pressure being on Poirier. Now, nobody explains, and all sports guys use the word pressure, and they'll talk about who has it. But they never explain to the audience why it matters. And they don't explain because they don't know. Most of your top sports guys didn't do sport. It's just a word that they heard. It's a word that they regurgitate. I'm not putting them down. I'm sharing with you, right? When you run into the Jim Grays of the world and have the foggiest idea what they're talking about, I will tell you, pressure creates a chemical release. It's created in your brain. The same as excitement and anxiety. It creates adrenaline. It can create a release that goes through your bodies and it will exhaust you. Will absolutely exhaust you. I was a wrestler in college. 7-minute match. 7 minutes is nothing. If you consider the fact that we would do that 2 hours a day, every day in practice. 2 hours hard. That thing we would do for 2 hours could barely get through 7 minutes of it. Why? What changed? What's different? Pressure. That's it. You inserted stress into an environment. That stress, as a chemical, creates a fatigue. So whichever person is feeling more pressure in an endurance sport oftentimes will deal with fatigue faster. And fatigue creates cowards out of all men. There is no better way to beat somebody than to get them exhausted. No better way. Doesn't matter what plays you start running at that point. Doesn't matter who's stronger, better, younger, whose mother loved him more, who ate better. I mean, go right down the list. If one guy's tired and one guy is not, scoring points becomes very easy at that point. So I just bring to your attention, that's why it matters. And if you do look at it, and you're looking at all the mistakes made by Poirier, and you're looking at coming down the card, and you're looking about all the pressures that are on him, and then you consider the other side, which is Poirier came out as an underdog. That surprised me, but I don't know if you can feel the pressure and be underdog at the same time. I don't know that you can. It's a bit of an oxymoron. Definitely mutually exclusive terms. So one thing that is also never considered is the fear that it puts into the other guy. Now, Denise, with his military background, is special. It's very hard to rattle somebody like that. But let's take a look at the scenario, because we see this scenario repeatedly where a star gets put in with a really good fighter. So one guy can really climb and one guy can really fall. We understand that. What gets missed is that the really good fighter looked up to the star. What gets missed when you put that younger guy in there with the veteran is a lot of times that younger guy's got a picture of the veteran on his wall. He's got magazines with the veteran on the cover. He's aspired to be like that guy. And that's a hard guy to beat. To beat a guy that you looked up to, it's just a hard guy to beat. And I could just tell you personal stories about that. It's a really hard thing to overcome. I had a guy in my hometown, good friend, went on to be a teammate, Greg Johnson. Greg Johnson was a senior when I was a freshman. I looked up to this guy. I wrestled this guy every day through high school, through college. He'd come back on Christmas break. Went and became teammates at University of Oregon. I got bare weight, but two weight classes heavier. In my life, I've taken him down one time and it was on accident. He did something wrong and I fell on top. I mean, it's one of those things where once you put a guy in this category, and that's the part that always gets missed. So you look at Dustin Poirier, he's got a job to do. If he would have wilted behind the scenes, and it wouldn't matter if it was Dana's voice that heard that wilt or if it gets reported back to the managers that call their client Denise himself and says, hey, that guy you looked up to, that guy you've aspired to be, that guy whose place you're trying to take, he buckled behind the scenes. You didn't have to hit him once. You've already beat him. He quit. Could you even imagine? Or you have somebody who has pride. I mean, this is a massive feather in the cap of Dustin Poirier. And don't forget that he's doing this at home. And he'll represent his home as Lafayette. I understand that. But he's lived and come by way of Florida for his entire meaningful fight career. And in any other sport, you have a home court advantage. You have a home field advantage, not in fighting. It is home field disadvantage. Fighting in front of your people and dealing with the pressures, having all the local papers and radio stations and all the time suck that they want on you. It's an amazing experience when it's done. I mean, it's amazing. I'm just sharing with you. Everything is against him, not to mention he's coming off a KO loss. You know, boxers do once they're KO'd one time. Poirier, coming off a KO loss. Everything is wrong. Everything here is against him. He signed anyway. This is a massive... When you're telling the Dustin Poirier story, when you're looking back, this is one of them. I can't say it's the one. He's had a few the one moments. That's a guy that's had a very special career, but this is one of them, what he's up against. Everything riding on it. It's even what I would consider short notice. I mean, tickets for Miami have been on sale for 3 weeks now. He just got put on the card 2 days ago. Oh, by the way, they didn't even help him out. I mean, if you're a short minute fight, you either get a belt that's on the line or you fight for 3 rounds, period, the end. You don't do short notice and do 5 rounds, period, the end. He took that too. There is nothing about this that couldn't be against him. Nothing. This is the figurative hand tied behind your back. Dustin Poirier signed on that line anyway. So You're not wrong to question him. You're not wrong to second guess him. But once that's done, understand this is a two-man sport. And understand he expects to win. And understand he knows what he's up against. So you get some of these guys that are young and hungry, and they stay that guy. And those are the ones that go on and have very long and meaningful careers. You have other guys that are young and hungry. They get to a little bit of a spot, and they freeze, and they panic, and they don't ever want to risk it. They don't want to get off that biscuit. They don't want to do anything. They turn the gun on the promoter. They do whatever it takes. They price themselves out of the business. They make up injuries. They do all sorts of stuff. Dustin Poirier did not. And it's an old expression, but all that a diamond is a piece of coal that withstood the pressures of time. There's never been a day when I feel that Dustin Poirier's moniker of the diamond is more perfectly placed on the right guy. I took a poll. I'm trying to help, but I'm walking on eggshells here, right? I would support anything Nate Diaz does. I would be behind him completely. And if he's finding himself in a fight and I'm saying that's not going to work, it's a mistake. That can sound as though I'm putting him down or his efforts down or his skills down. George Masvidal's returning. Had his fingers crossed when he retired in the first place. What an incredible thing that those two built. Masvidal versus Diaz. What an incredible thing. West Coast gangster versus East Coast gangster. And it was all done by Nate. Masvidal showed up. He's got the Versace. He's doing everything right. He's got the hair grown. His star was born. The flying knee had taken place. Super necessary was in the bag. But he put 100% of his focus on Conor McGregor. He got his friend, Steve-O specifically, out there vouching for him, fighting for him, trying to get Conor McGregor. He was never expecting, when he showed up in California that night, to be called out by Nate Diaz. It was huge. It was everything that we wanted. And no one had to shift weight classes. Conor going up, Conor going down. Where's Conor going to be at? I mean, that whole thing was just about a draw. And it would have drawn. It was the 1 versus 2. That would have been massive business. I understand that. But Conor didn't want to do it, not to mention he wasn't in the weight class. So now all of a sudden, you get the guy that beat Conor calling you out. They booked Madison Square Garden. They put it on top of the bill. The leader of the free world, the biggest dog in Hollywood, have all come to the table. And guess what? Guess what? Now, here's the shocking part. Here's this part shocking. It's not the way you remember the story. Guess what? Everything I just said, it wasn't enough. Whether it was that part of the world, it was too far from Florida, it was too far from California, whether ticket prices were too high, whether it was that date and weekend, we will never know. All we know is it didn't work. So we had to up it again. And that is where the creation of BMF came from. And it caught on. And BMF worked unlike any marketing tool. I would have to go back to a Don Cost promotion in 1986 out of Portland, Oregon, done at the sports arena called a coal miner's glove match. I swear to goodness, I have never seen a marketing tool. That's all the championship belt is, the Olympic gold medal. All these things are marketing. The Super Bowl versus a million other football games every weekend. It's marketing, but I haven't seen a marketing piece work as well as the BMF since the coal miners glove match. Truly. So, but you have to know all of those things. Boy, you have to know all of those things. Because if you're going to try to duplicate, see, this is the boxing match. Ariel Helwani has now reported that Nate and George are going to box in March. Guys, that's just not enough time. I mean, just as simple as that, it's just not enough time. If you do everything right, and I mean everything, that alone will sink you. It's not enough time. So I asked Ariel, because this is very inappropriate. If you had a secret like that, if you had a return like that, Masvidal hinted at this a week when he said, I'm returning, right? It was one of these things. Jake Paul tweeted out that it was Nate versus George. And then later, like, deleted it. But that didn't hurt the tweet. That added to the tweet. So, Ariel comes in and says they're going to do it. And they're going to do it in March. It's just not enough time. I don't mean enough time to get ready. I don't mean enough time to tell the story. It's not enough time to educate the fans if you want to sell pay-per-views. The one business nobody understands. And I've told them this a million times as the biggest voice in the sport. You know how many people trying to do this have called me? Said, Jim, what is it you know? Why do you keep acting like an expert? What is it you're so sure? What secret is it so sure you've got? They haven't even called. Isn't that weird? Isn't that a weird thing? It's not enough time. And I told the story of the BMF. Because the BMF was not created the night that Nate called him out. The world loved it. George was surprised. That building went insane. I myself was sitting with Gilbert Melendez. We turned each other. That was the call out, man. When Nate said, you a gangster, but you're no West Coast gangster. I mean, it was done. It was done. But it wasn't enough to fill up the garden. And there can be a number of variables as to why. Your supporting cast, your date, what you're competing with. There's a number of things, but I'm just sharing with you. That is why it got added. And I only share that with you because not one of those ingredients, right? It worked, but it barely worked. It figured it out right at the end. Thing turned out to be huge. But not one of those ingredients exists today. And if you have personal grudge trumps everything. I don't know if they do. And if I don't know if they do, it's the same as if they don't. It's the exact same thing. When the fight's in March, it's not enough time to tell the story. It doesn't feel like unfinished business. It doesn't feel like something they want to do. It doesn't feel like something they're willing to sacrifice and risk for. There's no belt, there's no title, there's no ranking. It doesn't feel. And if it doesn't feel that way, then it's not. And the first time they did, they had everything that I said, and it wasn't enough. That's the correct way to tell the story. I don't say this at all to be tough. I say this as one of the few guys that for some reason understands these stories or maybe just remembers what was right in front of you. So now there's a discussion that it's also going to be in Las Vegas. And Las Vegas is the fight capital of the world. You can't just bring something to Las Vegas. You can't even just hold your something. If you brought what could be a massive attraction and you stuck it at the Orleans, just for example, it now is not a massive attraction. You have three venues in that city to choose from. If you don't have one of those three, you don't have a massive attraction. Just to start with that. But when I bring up, you're taking it to the fight capital of the world. This is an educated audience. Now, most fights held there based on expectation of which history brings you there for is a destination where people come in, but there's not enough time. Not enough time to save, to plan, to find babysitters, to do whatever it is that you need to do, to get your buddy to book your old lady. There's not enough time. People are going to spend that income, that disposable income, in February for Valentine's Day. There's not enough time to then recoup and get it done by March. I mean, I can't say that to you enough times. And the only reason I say that to you, the only reason I say it is if you're going to do a deal with whoever you're doing this deal with, get your money up front. Your surety bond is going to protect you to a degree. You're with a very, very feckless commission. It is smoke and mirrors out there. They're not actually going to do a whole lot. Just so you know, you're much better protected than you were in the 60s when commissions got created, but you are not getting your full boat. Not if they stiff you. They'll go back and there'll be a game. It'll be a nightmare and you'll get a percentage. There is no pay-per-view on this. You've got to understand that. Because when I keep telling you there's not enough time, it's not to tell the story, to build interest, to pop the popcorn. It's not that. There's not enough time to educate the audience on where to go buy pay-per-views. I mean, when Ariel announced this, it was the only question I had, and he was stunned that I asked him. He thought I'd be asking him the rounds or the weight class or if they're making up a belt like so many do. I said, no, I just want to know who the promoter is. There's only three promoters in the world. You got guys that can go get a promoter's license. If you don't have distribution, you're not a promoter. You're just some local yokel that says they do. I say, right? It's like a guy that goes down to the gym and punches the bag and then tries to tell his buddies, I do UFC. It's like an old joke. What do? I do UFC. It's an old joke. There's no such thing as a promoter if you don't have distribution. You have these local yokels all over California, if you've ever been there, that are producers. They're camera. They got scripts. They got all these different things. Have you ever had anything made? No. Then you're not. Stop. Stop with the I'm a producer because you bought a camera down at Best Buy. Unless it's one of the three people who have distribution in America. So the audience knows where to go. So now all you have to do is storytell. You don't have to educate. Even then, you're in a very, very tough position. I don't think those two have heat with each other. I don't think there's a back and forth. I don't think that they have bad blood. If I'm wrong, if they want to stab one another. The fact that I don't know is a big problem, but it's not your business problem. Like that match where you got two huge stars, they're going to do something. But whether you read about it after the fact or you watch it, determines everything. We don't know who's promoting it. We don't know what date it's on. They're not playing the venue game. They don't have a production team. It's one of these things. It's a tremendous mistake. Tremendous. And I put a poll out on YouTube just to help. Just as one thing, I put a poll out. I thought it would come in about 60-40, but favoritive. About 60-40, but it would be favoritive. The question was just, are you going to watch this? I thought the answer would be yes, but it'd be pretty close to 50-50. I mean, you don't want something like that, right? You want a 95. Take an 88. Guys, it was 92% said no. I only had 5,000 people, in all fairness. But, I mean, I had them fast, and it's the base, it's the market, it's you guys. This is a mistake. It's a huge mistake. Stop right now. Summer is coming up, and that might mean that you're going to have a little more time on your hands. Why not use it to learn a new language? Rosetta Stone, the most trusted language learning program that truly immerses you in the language you want to learn, is here to help you. Some of you may be traveling abroad this summer, and you might want to experience that country beyond just the touristy type spots. Your experience could be upgraded just by learning the native language. Now you can download the Rosetta Stone app to your phone or tablet and learn on the go while driving, riding on the subway, running on a treadmill, or even laying poolside with just a 10-minute lesson per day. Rosetta Stone's lessons are designed for long-term retention of language skills rather than short-term memorization. The focus of the program is preparing you for real, authentic conversations, not just knowing a couple of translations. It's like having your own personal trainer for language learning. Rosetta Stone has been used by millions of people for over 3 decades. Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started for a limited time. My listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/ today. That's 50% off. Unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. That's a steal. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/ today. Guys, outdoor concert and festival season is upon us, and it will be all about the boots. And Tecovas is your one-stop shop for your head-to-toe attire needs. One of my favorite smells is fresh leather on a new pair of boots. Man, there's just something about being able to smell high quality with your own nose. You ever walked into the store? You know exactly what I'm talking about. I was so impressed when I found out all Tecovas boots are made by hand in a time-honored tradition. My wife, Miss Brittany, recently picked out a new pair for me, and I gotta say, I experienced an instant upgrade in my mood and my style. By the way, I always go with a rounded tip boot, no flat tip. It's more of a classic style. That's personal. And Tecovas has first wear comfort with little to no break-in period. It's hard to find this level of comfort paired with this level of style. Plus, their direct-to-consumer pricing keeps value on your feet and money in your pocket. Stop by your local Tecovas store, have a complimentary beverage or two, and shop new styles. The smell of fresh leather and a friendly staff are at your service. Many stores even have leather custom branding to make your boots truly personalized. And with regular live music and events, there's no in-store experience quite like it. If you can't make it to the store, just visit Tecovas.com. That's Tecovas, T-E-C-O-V-A-S.com. They offer free shipping on all boots, as well as free returns and exchanges, and ship right to your door. Go to Tecovas.com and find your favorite pair of boots today.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Ian Garry, he lives, he exists. He called out Colby Covington. Ian went on Ariel's show yesterday. He did as good a job as you could do. He really did. I'd have loved for him to have done what he did on Ariel's show yesterday, one day after Sean Strickland came at him about the book and the wagon, the whole bit. I just like the timing. I like to see him be able to deal with it. Not need to think, not need to hide, not need to lay low, not deal with that anxiety and pull up a fight. All the things that happen. I'd love to have seen him do what he did yesterday. And one thing that he did is called out Colby Covington. So, see, that was great. The guys that do a good job, okay, over here at Bad Guy Inc., we break down fights, don't we, guys? I mean, what is it that old Chael does? What if you were to explain? What does Chael do? He breaks down fights. He breaks them down either before they happen or he breaks them down immediately after they happen. And that's it. And he goes on to the next one. Prior to it happening or immediately after it happens. That's what we do over here. And if you went to any sports show, it's going to be the same thing. They're just going to have a theme, right? If it's going to be a football game, it's an upcoming game. They're going to tell you what happened immediate after the game. Do you agree with me? That's how sports is done. When you have a guy like me who comes in and breaks down an interview about a sporting event, you know that interview must have been pretty damn good. Because that's not how the game is played. I'm making a piece on Ian Garry, who didn't fight. And I'm making the piece about a fight that he doesn't have. So for us to get there, we need to back up and examine how did he do it. And the greats have an ability to do certain things. I stand back, and before I credit somebody, I try to deduce on my own, did they have a strategy? Did they understand what they're doing? Is there a plan here, and did they pick the right one? Or was it unintentional? One of the greatest marketing things, and when I say one of them, I believe it's number one. I believe it's the number one. It was at the time that it happened. So I'm just going to call it one of them. One of the greatest marketing things ever, the most successful press conference the UFC ever had. It tripled their numbers. Is when Nick Diaz did not show up. The UFC could not get put on SportsCenter. In fact, they even had an open fight. Dana was fighting with ESPN publicly. What are you doing? Why aren't you covering us? You cover sports. We're a sport. What are you doing? They covered that, and they covered it because Dana was fighting with them, and they thought it embarrassed Dana. They thought he had failed. They thought he botched a press conference, and they put it out to embarrass him. That's the real truth. They've never told the story, by the way. That is why that got so much coverage. So to set the scene, you got a stage. Dana would always bring a card with him, and every now and then, you just bring the main and the co-main. It was a rarity, if ever. When one fight was so big, that was your press conference. St. Pierre on one side, Diaz on the other, promoter in the middle. So imagine that shot, and you got George up there looking like $1 million. He's got a suit, he's got the gold belt. Dana's up there, he's flown in for it. You got the backdrop, you got everything going. You have an empty chair with a name tag in front of it that says Nick Diaz. Imagine that. It is a disaster. And SportsCenter, to this day, has never told Dana that. To this day, has operated like, yeah, man, that was a great event. We tried to help you. They put it out to embarrass him. It tripled. They're not. And Dana agreed with SportsCenter. He thought it was embarrassing. He thought, hey, we got a disaster here. He considered pulling Nick out of the fight. And Dana's reasoning was simple. He said, if I can't trust you to come to the press conference, how can I trust you to show up for the fight? That's a really fair question by Dana. He got assurances and reassurances, and we'll get there early, and please move forward. And they did. It did triple the numbers that were projected. So that was an unintentional. That's what I'm sharing with you. This was an unintentional, brilliant situation. Now, if you look at Sean O'Malley, that is somebody that I can credit as an expert to our sport, as somebody who's a student and studied it, looked at what worked, looked at what didn't work, make projection, and then makes his moves. I like that. Adesanya, same bucket. McGregor, same bucket. Unintentionally very good on a microphone, and people liked interviews and liked to tune in, Rampage Jackson, for example. So when I'm watching Gary, who is known for interviews, and I'm watching him do a brilliant thing, which is to call out Colby, I just personally am wondering, do we have a fellow student of the game? Do we have a new Sugar Sean? Do we have a new Izzy type guy? Or was this just unintentional? He just happens to be pissed off and he called out Colby. I mean, you must understand, to go in and do media and start doing an interview and start building a fight with a guy who you don't have a fight with is very counter norm, okay? To call out a guy vigorously who just lost is very against the norm. To be undefeated and trying to move your record to 15-0 and being, for your age bracket, one of the hottest prospects out there and call out a veteran of the sport is very against the norm. But I loved it. Why do I love it? Because the guy at the Quick Mark understands it. If the guy at the Quick Mark, if the guy working the counter, working the register at your local Quickie Mart can understand why these guys are fighting, I love it. And fighters don't understand that concept. I have had fight. Oh God, it's painful. And they'll tell you what makes sense. Well, that doesn't make sense. You know, I won my last three and he's 1-2 in his last ones and the rankings have us separate. It just doesn't make any sense. I'm ranked number 39 and almost nobody wants to see me. And he's ranked number 42 and nobody wants to see him. So it just doesn't make any sense. Like, you'll start to hear these things. And I just imagine if you're down at the Quickie Mart, okay? And you're explaining to the guy behind the counter as he rings you up. And you start telling him you're going to fight a guy because of your ranking. And this guy likes turkey on his sandwich, but you only have yours with ham. That's what it is when a fighter starts laying it out for you. Whenever a fighter starts telling you what his record is or who he beat, he's out. He didn't know what he's talking about. When he starts telling you about rankings, whenever he says this is what makes sense, he's out. If you go down to the Quickie Mart and you can tell the guy, I want to fight Covington because he insulted my wife, that guy understands it. You now have a fight. You now have a reason to call a guy out. You now have something that you can monetize. And that is the test that you need to be asking yourself constantly. If I want a fight and I laid my case out to the guy behind the counter while I'm buying the lotto ticket, which means you've only got a little bit of time, right? It's very relevant. It's an in and out situation. Hey, how you doing? How's your day? You got to hit him. You got to get out. You got to pique his interest or not. He's going to understand this guy pissed my wife off. He's not never in a million years going to say, well, how did he do in his last fight? Was he ranked? How old is he? How many fights have you had? What are you ranked? Never. Do you have any common opponents? How did it go? Did you finish him? Did he go a distance? What did the judges say? Never. Never would a fan ever give a damn. So it's a very interesting thing that Gary went after a guy coming off a loss when Gary has never lost ever. I think he's 14-0. Beautiful record. Very interesting that he would go after a guy with such a difficult stuff. Nobody calls out Colby Covington. Guys call Colby out and say he's a jerk. They don't call him and say, I want to fight him ever. Leon didn't want to fight Colby. Nobody wants to fight Colby. All of a sudden, we got a guy that wants to fight Colby. who could explain his story to the guy at the register at the Quick Mart. I liked it. It's job security. This job is no different than the one that you have. The most important thing, it's not being here early or staying late. It's not impressing the boss. It's not any of those things. It's not making sure your profits exceed your expenditures. The absolute most important thing you're going to do today is make sure you can come back tomorrow. It sounds to me as though Ian Gary got Jeff Neal coming up, and he's got another job to come to the day after that. It's very rare. Ghost guys don't do this. It's Adesanya 101. Is it unintentional or was it strategy? I'm curious myself. But if you're wondering what you missed on Ariel's show with Ian, I just told you. Hey guys, I want to give you a little back and forth. John Jones and Tom Aspinall. And let me tell you literally what was said, and then let's try to interpret and break this down. So let's just start with Tom. And Tom is a gentleman, but Tom is also a competitor in the fight business, right? Like, you can't go around being nice all the time when you're looking to get in a cage and damage somebody. But as far as being a sportsman and a father and a husband and representing the family, as far as really having some those traditional martial arts, Tom comes as close as you possibly can while still respecting that you're in the fight business. Tom kicks us off here. John, you are letting your ego run wild here, mate. I'm not downplaying your resume. It's incredible, far superior to mine. You're known as the best fighter ever. That's why I want to beat you. Surely you can understand that. John says, look, it really doesn't work like that. I was a champion when I was 23. You can't just show up at 30 pretending like you've been chasing me your whole life. You have no clue. I have no clue who 90% of your resume is. Meanwhile, I've been highlighting UFC events my entire career. So far, both guys have completely told the truth. Tom Aspinall, John Jones. You need to fight people who build your legacy. I believe that's a great idea. The UFC says, hey, John, do you want to fight Tom? Stipe, I don't want to fight him. John Jones, I don't want to fight him. Tom, confused look emoji. John Jones, I love how a fighter can do an interview about me every week, make silly memes on the internet, and then act like when I respond, they're the victim. Interesting. See, that one really lets you into John's mindset, and I like it. And it helps to explain how a guy with that level of success stays champion, right? This is a hungry guy. Okay, so now we go back to John Jones. He's going to hit Tom one more time here. He says, you know, Tom, you talking about someone's ego running wild is one of the most hypocritical things I've ever heard. You literally haven't kept my balls out of your mouth since you won that imaginary championship. Both you and Sergey have zero championships between your name. Okay, now, the reason I wanted you to have the exact words is we got a back and forth that you could have an Ambien or you could just follow these guys, right? Either one will put you to sleep until we get to the end. John Jones says you've had my balls in your mouth since you won your imaginary championship. Wow. What? What? Now, I like that line because Tom has almost effectively renamed the interim championship the active championship. I believe Tom to be the active champion. And it's not a word that we use. And so then you start discussing the interim. You start discussing the undisputed. You start going back and forth. And most people get lost, but you got a little something there, right? Like, it's a good jumping off point. John just renamed it. He did not rename it the active championship. He renamed it the imaginary championship. I mean, I got to tell you, like, that's great work by John. And he says to Tom, you've had my balls in your mouth since you won that thing. Now, John could end this anytime by saying yes. I mean, it sounds like John is being challenged. He could end whatever this is that he genuinely does not like. John does not enjoy that side of it. He doesn't understand it. He thinks the most money and the most accolades should go ever to who could beat up the most people. So John could end it. He could end something that he doesn't want to keep continuing by saying one word, which is yes. But you want to know something? John could also end this by saying one word, which is no. No. Plan to do one more. My plans have not changed for you. I plan to fight Stipe Miocic, who's great. Stipe might be the one to bring me down. We'll find out that night, but he might not. That'll be another notch, and it will be enough. My plans don't involve you. He could do that. Daniel Cormier dismissed, effectively, Curtis Blaydes. And I was there the night that he did it. He did it on the ESPN desk. He had just got done fighting. Curtis had called him out, and Daniel was a gentleman. He said, hey, that guy's, he's good. He's got reach, his striking's improved, a national champion wrestler. He's younger, he's got a great career in front of him. But he and I will never share the octagon. And Daniel didn't say it's because it's not a competitive fight. He didn't say he was better than him. He didn't even say he could beat him. He said, I'm a champion, I get points. I fight people that have big names. You don't. He leveled with him straight up. Never got into who's better, whose legacy, who should be remembered more. Daniel told the actual truth, which I can't make any money fighting you. You're a dangerous fight that doesn't bring money. Winning fights doesn't get you to me, just so you know. I know they've told you that, but it's not true. I know the magazines tell you that getting a high ranking brings you to me. I'm letting you know now, it doesn't. Win over the crowd that's willing to stop what they're doing, part with their money and time to watch you, and that's how you get to me. And you didn't do that. Other guys did. And it was so effective, it was never discussed again. Curtis Blaydes versus Daniel Cormier when Daniel was never discussed again. So John Jones could come out and say, you're young and you're good and I'm not looking for that. No. Or he could say, you suck. No. But it would still be a definitive and he could end this. Or he could say, yes. I'm gonna stick with the plan. I have Stipe first and then I will come see you. And see, that one would be very interesting. If John Jones gave a commitment that it was Aspinall, I'm going to see Stipe, because I gave him my word. But much like I gave him my word, I'll also give one to you. I'm going to give him an ass whooping, and I'm going to come give one to you. My man and my word. If he would have done that, it would have been interesting, because see, now Tom is having to dance to the beat that John is playing. What would Tom do? If Tom had that guarantee, what would he do? Do you think he would go and find another opponent? Do you think that he would fight again? Do you think that he would risk it? Or would he sit and wait? Imagine the power that John Jones would have had if he would have told him, yes, I'll give you the fight. It won't be my next fight. I've already given somebody my word, but then I'll come see you. Could you imagine the power that John would have then had? And it would have ended this. And one thing about it is, John hasn't said yes and he hasn't said no. He's let it be very clear that this irritates him. I love the imaginary championship. I love the balls on my mouth. I like that he finally came strong. I mean, everything else he had was, it was silly and stupid. Most of it was misspelled and ungrammatical. I mean, you never have to wonder if John, it's kind of like, why does he not get himself a driver? Why would he not part some money? If you give a stripper 10 grand that you're never going to see again, why would you not hire a rider for 10 grand? He'll be there the whole year. That's about what it would cost if somebody to manage your Twitter page. It would be about $10,000 for the whole year for a real top guy, a WWE guy, a guy that's worked in Hollywood, a real top professional writer. That's about what it would cost. And you know John doesn't have a driver. That's how he's got DUIs. And you know he doesn't have a writer. That's why he's got typos. And I just bring to you, I love imaginary. I love balls on my chin, but he hadn't said yes and he hasn't said no. And you want to know something else? Tom's hands aren't clean here. Tom hasn't made it clear what he's asking for. Is Tom asking John for a fight? But moreover, is he asking for the next fight? Is he asking when you return, bump Stipe, bring me in? It's champ versus champ. It's the way it's done. If you weren't planning to do this, why didn't you speak up before I had my interim fight? You know the industry, and you know the deal. The interim champ fights the undisputed champ. If you were not planning to honor that part of our history, why didn't you tell me before I won it? He hasn't done any of those things. I'm not totally clear on what it is that Tom wants. I thought, I did know, I thought he just wanted John stripped and he just wants to be recognized for what he is. The best fighter right now. Best active fighter. But I'm not certain that I'm right. I also think that Tom wants to fight. But I'm not sure I'm right about that because I don't think that Tom wants to wait. And he hasn't made it clear that he wants to fight Stipe to earn the fight to John, or that he wants to fight John after Stipe, or that he wants Stipe pushed aside and John to come in. Like, neither guy has been clear. So I guess we go back and forth. I'm fine with that. If we're going to have more imaginary championships and balls on chin, I'm fine with it. That's fun stuff. If we're going to go back to talking about resumes that nobody understands or what you've done, I don't know why we're doing it. It's just not the way this game is played. This game is just simply not played about who beat who or when you did it. So, John and Tom, I'm all for it. But what is it that we're doing? What is it we're trying to do? And John could end this by saying yes or no. John has the power either way. His reasons don't matter at all. Including the playground where you're scared. That could be a reason. Wouldn't matter. Nothing would matter. He has the power. Is it yes or no? Stipe, then me, or Stipe, and then not me? And how much do I matter to you, kid? Because if I make you the deal right now that I'll fight you, if I go fight and I lose to Stipe, do I still get to fight you? Because you'll still be interim champion. Do I get a shot at that belt? Guaranteed, no matter what. I mean, how much do I matter to you? Or is it about the belt? I mean, there's a way to get some clarity. There's a way to muddy these waters. And there's a way to do what Daniel did and said, you're just not popular. Whatever the reason is, you got to give a guy an answer. Yes or no. Or we just keep doing this. Generally, I would be okay. Like, if this was Connor or somebody entertaining or fun, I would hope that it would continue. You guys aren't fun. This is boring. And all these tweets, I did like imaginary, I did like balls on chin. The rest of it, I kind of wish it would stop. Drake Riggs, you guys know Drake? Drake is one of these guys, I like Drake so much. If I was in a room and I saw him, even when he's in disguise, growing facial hair, shaving the facial hair off, I'll stop what I'm doing, I'll go and make sure I say hello. And Drake wrote a piece today. I don't know that Drake ever writes a piece that I don't read. And he's great. And there was a miss, and I just want to address it, because one of us is wrong. Now, Drake had written a piece about John Jones and Aspinall. And John Jones has such an incredible skill when he decides to play. He just doesn't, one, know he's good at it. He does not know that. And the reason he doesn't is because he is Mr. Sensitive. Like, as big of a badass as he is that you guys see, he is equally a baby that you don't see. And most fighters are, in all fairness. I'm just letting you know, John is not aware. Okay, when people go on the internet, and you'll be able to relate, you've either seen this or you've done it yourself, but when you go on the internet, you don't go on the internet to be nice. That doesn't mean there aren't nice people on the internet. They don't go on there to be nice. The comments they make, they don't make in a, boy, this sure is wonderful spirit. They go on there and they get out a negative energy. It's why every comment you read online is bad and you only meet nice people in person. It's not real. You can't get into that and think that it is. Everybody is happy and angry. They only bring the angry part to the internet. Then they go live their normal life in their perfectly civil situations. I bring that to you and it may sound like I'm stating the obvious. John doesn't know that. So when he goes online, and 9 out of 10 comments are bad, he assumes 90% don't like me. He doesn't understand that only 1 out of 100 positive thoughts will post. So if he got one good one out of 10, he's got 100 positive and only 10, but it's a weird math. So I'm just sharing for you. I'm not picking on John. It's quite the opposite. He's very good at the banter. He's very skilled with, he called it an imaginary title. He called the interim title imaginary title. That's great. That's simple. That's great stuff. That's G-rated, right? Will Smith didn't have to curse to sell albums, but some people do, so F him and F you too, right? And John is generally the kind that has to. Imaginary title. This is G-rated. This is playful. This is good stuff. And I'm just telling you, but he doesn't know he's good because all the comments come back bad. So he spends all his time trying to look like somebody that he thinks you want. Spends all his time, and it used to be much worse in his younger career. He'd be talking about the Bible, he'd be tattooed some verse. Oh my goodness. It was sickening. It was sickening, it was so phony, but at least the comments were okay. All right. I'm sharing this with you because John's very good at it when he gets going. When he relaxes, when he can send out a message that is what he would say to you if you were face-to-face in a bar, and then puts the phone down. Not then sits there and refreshes it to see what comes back his way. And that's the addiction. That's the addiction that these guys have, man. That fame is a drug. They will do anything to get it, including sending out stupid tweets. Man, stop. Stop. Or have the discipline to put it, and you put it down. And my entire diatribe there is based on something, which is Drake breaks down the back and forth that John is having with Aspinall. And you have the interim champion going after the undisputed champion, okay? But you also have a hurt champion, a non-competitive champion. That doesn't work. A hurt and non-competitive cannot be the top guy. Right? You cannot have a guy that can't walk out there. I can't even walk out and try. And I know that's cold. I know that statement is done without heart. But so do other people that aren't good enough of explaining that they just kept the belt on him. They know that sounds so cold to take something from a guy that's injured. They don't know how to explain it to you, so they just don't do it at all. But for Aspinall to say the opposite, which is, I'm an active champion, and what happened to you can and will happen to me someday, but right now is my time. Right now is my day. And I'm not claiming to be better, have a better legacy. I'm not claiming anything over you other than I can beat everybody today that can compete. You're admitting that I can. You're openly admitting that you can't even go out there for whatever reason. And I would just like to be recognized. Like, it's one of these things where there's not a lot going on here. And what I just said to you is not that hot and juicy. You got one belt going after another belt. It's not that juicy. And I mean, I can tell you guys, I've been talking about this, but I'm talking about it less and less because you guys are engaging with me less and less, right? I'm on YouTube. I'm running an interactive, this is my social life. In a large part, I come talk to you guys, you make comments, I read every single one of those. Give you the thumbs up, I'll reply to them. I mean, I'm just sharing with you, like that's not done by a bot or a mod. Nobody's got those codes but me. So when I do topics that you're not interested in, I have a real punishment, which is when I do have some free time and I go to this ecosystem we've created, I don't have any company. And that's it. That's as truthful as I can speak to you. I count on you coming back. So when I do this topic, I'm not getting anywhere. And that is unusual because you have a Hulk Hogan versus Ultimate Warrior situation. You got two belts in one company. There is only one way to solve that. You must fight. Not to mention, you have the perennial division. Not to mention, both guys sound right. John claiming to be the greatest ever, that sounds right. Aspinall claiming he could beat any man alive that's willing to walk out there today. That sure sounds right. Like, they both sound right. But which one equals victory, right? It's one of these things. I don't know that I've seen Tom fully call out John. Tom has said he'd do the fight, but he has called strongly for that title. But I don't know that he strongly called out John. And I don't know that Tom has dealt with Stipe at all. You know, the Stipe factor of, hey, man, you wanted a title shot. I got a title, and I'll give it to you. But I want something you have, too. They're saying you're the number one contender, even though I have the belt. We both know that doesn't work. If you're the number one contender, you should have this belt. But if I have the belt, I should be the number one contender. And for whatever reason, or whatever room of PR, and whatever is actually going on in that story that is yet to be revealed to us, I know what it is. I can't tell you yet. Let's just do it ourselves. Let's just figure it out ourselves. And that really hasn't happened either. It's quite unclear. So John Jones had the ability to end this because he doesn't like it. He doesn't like it, and he doesn't know he's good at it. He's confused. He's confused by the numbers. But he can end it by giving an answer. Staying in this in-between is what the back and forth is. And it's also where a guy like me that's counting on engagement is dying on the vine. I can't keep this story alive. Right? I mean, the way this works is you two do something, whether it's social media or whatever, you do something that guys like me then come and grab it. We spread gas and we keep it going. If you make a comment that I or guys like me do not comment on, you're dead in the water, and that's fine. You just got to start over. You got to send out a new message and see if that one sticks. Okay. John can end it by saying, yes, I'll fight you. Well, we're done here. We are all done talking. Got to wait for the fight. We got to play the venue game. We got the rehab game. I've got the Stipe business. My man on my word. I've given you my word, but I'm going to deal with this too. You would certainly understand that. But it ends. Or he just tells him no. That doesn't add to this, by the way. So many people think that it does. And I think that John is of that belief as well. That I want to dismiss him. Telling him no is what he wants. It makes me look like I'm a chicken. It makes me look like I back down. No, it doesn't. It ends this. One thing that Tom has done is be honest. Tom is very open with you, the audience, and with himself. John has this power. It doesn't happen without John's blessing. It can happen with his blessing. He's very open about that, which is where if John says, no, we're done here. So these guys have a back and forth, and Drake weighed in on it. Now, this whole thing comes back to one point that Drake made, which is Stipe and Jones are going to fight. They have both said they're going to retire after that fight. So when they retire, it is then that Tom becomes undisputed champion just by default. And it's that one point that I am correcting, which is the interim champion means just that. In the meanwhile, in the interim, as soon as the undisputed champion returns, and that is not a press conference, that is not a bout agreement, it's not even a weigh-in. As soon as the bell rings for the first round, the undisputed champion is now back, which means the interim is now gone. There is no in the meanwhile. It is now gone. When the bell rings for John Jones' return fight, doesn't matter if John wins or loses. I didn't say when the final bell rings. When the first bell rings, Tom is no longer champion of anything. And I'm bringing it to you not because I'm taking Drake on. I'm correcting you. This is officially the answer, but I'm bringing it to you because we follow the rules that we make up as we go. I'm aware of that. But I'm going to make them say it. I'm going to make them say we're making this up as we go. And Ronda Rousey and Jose Aldo became champions of the world without ever stepping in the octagon. So we can definitely do whatever we want to do, but that's not what the rule is. That's not even what the word means. That's not what the policy is. That's not what the precedence is. And it's very important that that is revealed. It doesn't make a bit of difference when it comes on the bell ring. This bell is now unactivated. Do whatever you want. Tom would be the champ. We understand that. It's just not the rule, right? Like if they're going to fight at heavyweight and they're weighing at 305 pounds, that's not what the heavyweight fight is. You can go ahead and fight in the world and we'll recognize the act, but it's not what it is. Let's just make sure we admit it. It's extremely important that that detail get hammered out and stated. Otherwise, Tom has no chance of getting a fight in between. There'd be no reason to do it. The reason opens up when you reveal what I just said, which is just the truth. There is no interim champion. You haven't returned of an undisputed champion. If you're not understanding that distinction, and moreover, why that is so important, I can't say it any clearer than that.
stud.
You guys watch Arnold Allen?
Oh,
this guy is fun. Actually, not my point. He goes on Ariel's show, and he's addressing Volkanovski. I mean, I think he's coming back too soon. And he went on, right? And you know what he's talking about? He's talking about because Volk was knocked out. First time ever. First time's a big one. It's a very big one because it creates a psychological. You see that more apparent in boxing, much more apparent than you do in MMA. But in boxing, they'll tell you a guy is never the same once he gets knocked out. And it's not physical like you think. It's not. It doesn't change in this, and it's tender, and it's not. It's psychological. Once you know you can be hit, right? There is such power in being naive. There is such power in what you don't know. Once you know it can happen, it makes you shy. You're afraid. Every time you do offense in boxing, every time one of my hands leaves the protection zone, I'm susceptible. I'm susceptible to something. So all of a sudden, boxers aren't throwing the same, right? Which means they're getting punched more. Offense is your best defense in any sport, right? Strength through power every time. And I only bring that to you to tell you the distinction between MMA and boxing. But this is what Arnold Allen is talking about. This is what he's saying. Hey, he's returning too fast. Arnold even said he believes that Volk should have taken 1 month out of the gym completely. But that Volk got right back in there, is going full bore. Said, I'd hate to see him risk his legacy just over expediency. And then he went on, Arnold Allen still, to talk about Ilya Topuria. Said, man, that guy's good. Said, that's a legit wrestler. It's a very legitimate black belt. Good hands, good kicks, good cardio, good confidence. And all of those things are true. And I'm really glad that Arnold brought those up, because I do feel as though that's being missed. I mean, just how good Topuria is truly being missed. I mean, this guy went from Mr. Water Bottle to Mr. Main Event. And Mr. Water Bottle, in his main event, beat some killers along the way, amassed a completely perfect record. Last time I looked, it was 14-0, but I don't think I've looked since his last fight. I think he's 15-0. Either way, that's a lot of dudes versus an O. And I do think he's got Volk at the right time. But there is very much something to what Arnold Allen is saying. There is very much something to the speed of this fight in conjunction with first knockout loss, right? First uncompetitive loss ever. There's something to it. Now, the other side of the coin is what Volk disclosed. Man, these things are hard on me. I did you a favor. I jumped right in here. I wasn't fully prepared. This isn't my weight class, right? I mean, Volk didn't use these as excuses. He used these to make his case to say, please get me back quickly. Okay, got to do it. And there's no way to know how he's going to respond, right? Because there's two schools of thought. I don't like the break. I get the break and I get everything that Arnold Allen is saying, all of it. It makes sense, and Arnold Allen has history on his side. I don't. I'm personalizing. I don't like it. There's one thing about our sport that I resented. Only one thing I didn't like, that you get three matches a year. What is that? It used to drive me crazy, and I started while there were still tournaments. I got to be part of a couple of tournaments, so I got to do two guys in one night. I was in a tournament. Had it gone a little bit better, that would have been three guys in one night. But this is what I was used to. I guess I was a wrestler. You wrestle somebody at a dual meet on Thursday. You enter a tournament on Saturday. You go till that thing's done. That could be seven matches. Eight. So you're not like eight matches a week. Seven in a day. I mean, I'm just sharing for. I don't get this three a year. I've never understood three a year. I don't like it. And I don't really care how that first result goes. You get tech falls, you get pinned, you barely win, you go into overtime. I mean, there's all these different scenarios. 45 minutes later, call my name and put me in there with somebody else. But that's a mindset, man. They're not all like that. I come from a heavy grappling background, so I have a different experience. Arnold Allen comes from a heavy striking background. Like, the things he's seen, the guys that he's seen that try to rush out there are very different than the guys that I saw, the guys that I admired and grew up with, that, yes, you return right away. No matter how you feel, take the ice off, take the tape off, shut up about it, and go. Is Volk turning up too soon? You know, it's a very interesting thing. And Ilya is acting differently for this fight. I never like when a guy's approach changes. I mean, I'll just share that with you. If you do something different, expect something different. You must dance with the one that brought you. And guys that don't do that have one thing in common, which is they lose. And almost every time. You get a different trainer, different coach, you start dressing with a different style, you get a different girl on your arm, whatever it is, if you are not dancing with the one that you came with, the one that got you to that point, doing something different, expect something different. The only thing I'm noticing from Ilya, he's just being nicer. That's it. Right? But he could also be being nicer out of respect. It may not be because he's changed anything. He just doesn't have a hard time with Volk. He didn't want to manufacture something. I can live with that. But is Volk coming back too soon? I mean, we got to make a decision on this, guys. You got to make it before the fight. Because what you're doing is you're then going to take away from Topuria. So if we're going to take away from Topuria, which we love to do in the sport, but if we're going to do that, let's just do it sportsmanlike and do it ahead of time. Let's say ahead of time, this is a reduced Volkanovski. So if you beat him, you're not going to get your credit. And if you lose to him, we're going to give you a doubly hard time. I mean, which one is it? That's all that I'm suggesting for you. And what is Volk's plan? And Arnold Allen also said that when Volk returned, he returned full steam, jumped right into it. But I don't know that he would know that. I don't know that he would have that piece of information. There's ways that you can return to training, because training is largely a mindset. I mean, I must tell you, I've never been to a training camp in my life, unless it was to support somebody else. I was a training partner at people's training camps. I've never had one. And I go to practice every single day at 3. And then I put in my calendar of my phone what day was the first day of camp, because I didn't know another word. So I would still go to the same practice doing the same thing at 3. But in my mind, I now must go harder. If I was tired and wanted to rest, I won it. If I was on bottom and wanted to stay there doing guard, I won it. I would get up. If I wanted some water, but it wasn't, I wouldn't take the water. You know, just these little things like this. But it's very much a mindset. Coach calls practice at 6 a.m. Coach practice at 4 a.m. Whatever it is I'm doing, as long as I'm there. Now you're part of that mindset. Be doing sprints. You could be on a bike. You could be on the aerodyne. You could be doing mitts. You don't have to be sparring. You can, in fact, do anything to do with the sport. Live grappling, live everything aside from sparring. And I only bring that to you because I think if anybody's intelligent in the sport, we got to give it to Volk. We got to give it to the champ. But Arnold does make a lot of really good points, including his compliments of Ilya Topuria, which might be a part of the story that is being left out. Just how good and just what a big threat Topuria is does appear, to me at least, to be part of the story that isn't fully being appreciated. All right, guys, that's it for today's program. Thank you for listening. And for those of you that go over to Apple Podcasts and leave reviews, I gotta tell you, we have received tons of great reviews in the last few weeks. But I want to read this one. This comes from Brian Smith. He says, "Chael, I'm a longtime fan and an avid listener. Our family the last few months has been spending a lot of time at the hospital so our youngest son can get a bone marrow transplant. Your podcast hits at all the right times for me. Thank you for all that you do." No, Brian, thank you. Thank you, and I want to wish you and your family all the best. If there's anything more that I can do, you know how to reach me. Enjoy the fights this weekend, everybody. Brian, let me go back to you. If your son happens to be a fan, if you're listening to me, I appreciate it. If your son is a fan, I need to know. I will make a personal video for him. For everybody else, I'm going to be back on Tuesday. Until then, I'm Chael Sonnen, and you are welcome.